Many people were raised on the idea that getting a good college education would bring job security and upward economic mobility. And for some people, it does work out that way. But our next guest says there's a wider argument that education is the solution to economic inequality, and that's driven a lot of government policy. But he says things don't really work out that way, and that we've fallen prey to what he calls the education myth. And the myth isn't new. The idea that education can or even should be a one-way ticket to economic security and prosperity has been building, he writes, since the 1960s with support from both major political parties. He says the myth has done a lot of damage to people with college degrees who increasingly struggle with high debt and tough job markets, and to people without college degrees who often get left behind. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on the importance of education? What role do you think it should play in society? As a government policy, do you think that investing in education is the best way to deal with things like economic inequality? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. John Shelton is a professor and chair of democracy and justice studies at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, and vice president for higher education for the American Federation of Teachers, Wisconsin. His new book is called The Education Myth: How Human Capital Trumped Social Democracy. And we're talking about that book right now. John, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here, and hope folks are staying cool out there.
Definitely. Now, you're clear in the book. You like education. You're a college professor. You are for it in many ways. But as a social policy, a public policy, talk about the rise of this education myth that you're worried about.
Yeah. I mean, I'm an educator professionally, as you mentioned. So it'd be pretty weird if I thought education was a bad thing. Education is a great thing, right? It opens doors for people. It's central in how we conceptualize democracy and has been in this nation since, you know, really pretty close to the nation's founding. The problem is that the way Americans have thought about education has changed. And as you noted, this started to change in the 1960s, particularly in the Johnson administration, when policymakers started by Democrats, actually, right? Johnson was a Democrat. Drew on these ideas from a school of economists called human capital. And the idea there was that investing in individual skills was the primary way that working people actually, first of all, was why the economy had been prosperous, and how it was that working people should seek economic prosperity, right? And it ignored a lot of the realities for why American workers were so much more prosperous in the 50s and 60s, things like labor unions and progressive taxation and the legacy of the New Deal. But this education myth really took root starting in the 1960s, and more Democrats believed in it, like Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton, all the way up through Barack Obama, and even to a certain extent, Joe Biden. And Republicans like George H.W. Bush, who said he wanted to be the education president, and of course, through No Child Left Behind under his son, there was a big political consensus that we don't need these other social interventions because they undercut the power of the wealthy, undercut the power of corporations, and make donors unhappy. And so all that was needed was to make it easier for workers to invest in their own education. And if they did that, they would be successful. And unfortunately, that ignores all of the things that actually happen in the labor markets, right? It's not just about a worker's individual skills. It's about whether the interest rates are high or not, right? And the Federal Reserve is trying to, induce lower economic productivity in order to reduce inflation. It's about where jobs are. Are there jobs in the city where you live? It doesn't matter what kind of education you have. If you're living in an inner city where there literally aren't any jobs, and also, like, how much power employers have. Is it easy for employers, as has increasingly been the case in the past 30 or 40 years in the U.S., for employers to break unions, right? Because that diminishes the power of workers in the labor market. And so I argue that the education myth has done a lot of damage, not because education's bad, but because it's allowed us as a political system to ignore all the other things that working people actually need to have economic security in the long term.
And you contrast this human capital notion with an idea represented by FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, so what he called the Second Bill of Rights, saying that people had rights to jobs that pay for their needs, health care, child care, the list goes on. Can you talk about that vision that, if I'm reading you right, got left behind by the education myth?
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to say something at the outset. It's really important that we don't romanticize some of the things that happened in the New Deal, as probably a lot of people know listening to this. But if you don't, I'll remind you, there were significant racial and gender inequalities woven into the New Deal because FDR and other Democrats had to accommodate white supremacist Democrats in the South who controlled a lot of congressional committees. So I don't want to romanticize this. But the key term here is social democracy, that coming out of the experience of the New Deal, or sorry, the Great Depression, and all of the efforts from working people across the United States, really since the beginning of the industrial era, to fight for labor rights and to fight for industrial democracy and to fight for healthcare and other things that people need to have good lives, the New Deal and the FDR administration really privileged the idea that of social democracy and expanding the economic and social rights of everyday Americans. And the political system completely changed under FDR, right? Democrats became the majority party in the United States for like 40 years until the 70s and 80s, arguably later than that. And they did that because they premised that the entire political system on these economic and social rights for everyday workers, and they were deeply popular. So you have the expansion of retirement and Medicare and Medicaid in the 1960s, these deeply popular programs that made people's lives more economically secure, and that's really what the premise of the New Deal and, as you mentioned, the Economic Bill of Rights, which is a speech that really kind of capped the FDR administration in 1944 and its call for social democracy. And the argument that FDR made, and I think this will probably resonate with a lot of people today, is how can you be free if you can't find a good paying job? How can you be free if you don't have healthcare? How can you be free if you don't have the right to recreation and the right to transportation and yes, education? How can you be free if you can't have all of those things? And so many of those things, there are massive impediments in a free market, supposed free market economy for people to access those things. And so what the New Deal was all about was actualizing those things so that people would have the economic security to have better lives. That's really what was driving it.
Talking to John Shelton from UW Green Bay about his new book, The Education Myth: How Human Capital Trumps Social Democracy. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. John, a big change here between that Economic Bill of Rights idea and what you say is the human capital, the education myth is, okay, if we have a bunch of people in low-paying jobs, that other model, the FDR model, might be to say, okay, how do we get the wages for those jobs up so they're more livable? The human capital model seems to be, how can we get people education so they can get out of those low-paying jobs and into higher-paying jobs? How does that end up affecting people without college degrees, ultimately?
Yeah, and let me add one other thing to that, Rob, and this is important. Under the New Deal, it wouldn't just be let's try to raise people's wages. It would be let's directly create jobs so that workers have access to good paying jobs. Right? One of the big things about one of the most important successes of the New Deal was through the Works Progress Administration, literally creating millions of jobs that put people to work. So you get to the 1960s and Lyndon Johnson, and it's not just Johnson, there's many people around him too, are really concerned about the growing realizations of the poverty that still existed in the United States, even in this massively more prosperous time of the 1960s, right? There's all these exposés about poverty, and this connects to race, of course, because civil rights protesters are demanding economic equality. And so the Johnson administration is inspired to do something about this. And there's a debate in the administration, right, about how to solve this. Should there be more efforts to like literally create jobs in places like Detroit and Watts in Los Angeles, where African Americans have very limited economic opportunities? Or should the resources be given to try and expand education for people in those areas? And unfortunately, in my view, those resources go toward education as not that I think education is bad, again, but as the means to try and help them overcome their supposed deficiencies in the labor market, instead of ensuring that there are good jobs available for them. And that's a really, really important choice. And I think the Johnson administration did it for a couple of reasons. One, because you know, you have economists and other people who had succeeded in the kind of academic meritocracy saying that that was the best approach, right? Give people the right education. But it's also easier to do that, right? You don't have to upset the kind of political assumptions and power dynamics that exist in society if you are just telling people we're going to give them education, right? And so, unfortunately, in my view, that then drives 50 years of policy in terms of how we're going to help people who don't have, who have limited economic, help people who have limited economic means, help them to gain better jobs and to gain economic security. And it's just impossible for that to work, right? And so when you hang everything on education, particularly, as you noted, the promise of college degrees, which becomes a much bigger part of this story, especially from the 90s on, when you have Clinton negotiating the North American Free Trade Agreement and saying we're going to reskill workers and pushing workers into college, and especially George W. Bush and Barack Obama pushing for college as the answer. What happens is you're telling all of those people, and in this country, something like 65% of Americans don't have college degrees. You're telling them, we don't have anything for you. So I argue that that has led to, especially for folks without college degrees, a lot of disaffection with the political system, and has led to some of the really sort of intense cynicism, I think, toward politics in our political system.
We're talking to John Shelton, professor of democracy and justice studies at UW-Green Bay. His new book is called The Education Myth, How Human Capital Trumps Social Democracy. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your reactions, your questions for our guest. What is the purpose of education, of higher education? Should it be focused on job training and skills? Is that the best investment if we want to lift people out of poverty? Or do you like his notion of returning to FDR notions of social democracy? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with John Shelton, professor of democracy and justice studies at UW-Green Bay. We're talking about his latest book. It's called The Education Myth, How Human Capital Trumped Social Democracy. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Laura is with us in Manitowoc. Laura, hi.
Hi. So I'm just calling really with my reaction, which is one of the things that you asked for. Thank you for taking my call. And I feel a little bit better after talking to the screener. She assured me that the guest is truly pro-academics or pro-education because, you know, at first listen, it doesn't really appear that way. It really sounds to me like what he's doing is advancing the kind of the fascist narrative that the right is really promulgating currently. I just hear them steadfastly being so pro-labor, not as we think of it in terms, you know, politically, but pro, I think, as opposed to pro-education. And I really feel that the purpose for, you know, getting an education is not to get a job. The purpose for getting an education is to get an education. So I agree with the guest on that account.
However, Laura, I gotcha. Thanks. You gave us a lot to talk about already there. John, a book called The Education Myth could be a very different book. And I think maybe that's what Laura was hearing off the bat.
Yeah. And trust me, this is not the first time I've gotten it. And Laura, appreciate you calling in and talking about that, because it's a really important observation, a really important question. You know, I think one thing that might help is if you think about this in terms of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So for people listening to this, there's a psychologist named Abraham Maslow who talked about the things people needed to have good lives. And so if you think about it as a triangle, at the bottom is things like like having basic needs met, right? Like things like shelter, food, housing, all of those things that we absolutely need as human beings just to kind of function. And so what I'm saying is what we've told people is, you don't get those things unless you figure out how to get the right skills through the education system, right? And what we need to do is guarantee all those things to people so that they have those basic things. And education should be something, absolutely, it's going to give you the skills to go and do different things. That's one of the purposes of it. but it's also about training people in citizenship and training people how to you know, effectively be like, you know, humane people who can get along with each other and empower people to you know, have friendships and everything, you know, and all the things that we know make our lives good. But you can't require, you can't tie people's long-term economic security to whether or not they get the right education. And that's what I'm really saying here. I want everybody to have all the, a good job, housing, healthcare, all those things, and the kind of education system that really enables people to be their best selves. That's really what I'm talking about. I am a deep believer in education. And what I'm saying is the way we save education is by making sure people have all these things, save public education, I should say.
Laura, thanks for the call. And Laura also touches on, I think, a fundamental difference of opinion on the role of education. Education as preparing us for our jobs of the future versus education as preparing us to be citizens in a participatory democracy. Can you talk about that contrast?
That's absolutely right. And she mentioned, you know, the, you know, kind of right-wing politicians. I believe she used the term fascist. I won't use that, but right-wing politicians and the way they're thinking about education. There's been a concerted effort. I'm a UW professor, right? Like I'm on the front lines of this. A concerted effort by the right in this country and in our state. That's why we got a budget cut in the UW system to prevent us from talking about things that we know our students and the people of this state need to talk about, like race, gender, sexuality, and class. That's what this sort of effort that happened in the budget to deprive the UW system of funding to prevent us from being able to, you know, have resources for diversity, equity, and inclusion is really all about. So these are the fundamental stakes of this. Do we have an education system that is actually open to everyone and open to the pursuit of truth? Or do we have one, which I think many people on the right would want, that actually censors us and doesn't allow us to talk about the things that we know people need to learn about in order to have good lives? So she is onto something unbelievably important, and the stakes of that could not be higher.
Talking to John Shelton about his new book, The Education Myth, How Human Capital Trumped Social Democracy. John, you've got a vision for what you would hope education would look like and for public policy to look like. How do you see a way to get there from where we are now?
I think absolutely. And to go back to the point I was just making about the stakes of these debates around our education system, you're seeing people across the political spectrum have to really think about what it is we want our education system to do. And, you know, what I think, what we think about as Americans, most of us agree on, is we want a democracy. Not only do we want a democracy, we want a multiracial democracy in which every person in this country is truly treated as an equal. And here's how we're going to get there. We're going to get there by making sure that every single person is treated with the dignity that they deserve, that they have access to economic security so that they can live lives without the fear of what's going to happen to them if they lose their job or somebody gets a health emergency. And the education system is going to help us get there, because what education can do at its best, public education, is teach people to be good citizens, empower them to challenge the world around them, and to organize with all of the other people who they know in their neighborhood and at their workplace to build the kind of multiracial democracy that we all deserve in this country.
And John, some of your main, I think, criticism in the book is directed at Democratic leaders, as in the Democratic Party leaders over the decades, who embraced what you call the education myth and in some ways became a party of the educated and professionals. Leaving, I think you make the case, working people behind, working people perceive the Democratic Party moving away from them. And you say they may have had good reason to feel that way.
I think that's absolutely right. And there's obviously a lot of examples I could use. I wrote a whole book about it. But maybe the quintessential example of this is Bill Clinton, who became president. He was the head of an organization called the Democratic Leadership Council, which was formed in the 1980s, essentially funded by donors, elite donors who wanted to move the Democratic Party away from its traditional focus on working people. And Clinton ran for presidency, of course, in 1992. And then when he became president, one of the first things he did was to extend George H.W. Bush's administration's negotiations for the North American Free Trade Agreement, which was incredibly controversial, NAFTA. Organized labor, environmentalists all pushed to not have that law or to have that trade deal passed, because they knew it would cost lots of blue collar workers, people without college degrees, their jobs. And what the Clinton administration did is they basically, including Robert Reich, who's gone on to become a big progressive champion for working people since and said he was wrong about this, basically went around and said, it's okay. We know working people are going to lose their jobs, and that will lead to less economic security for them, but we're going to make it easier for them to retrain and they can go get another job. Well, not everybody wants to do that. People have pride in their jobs, right? And a lot of those people actually empirically didn't end up getting better jobs. They ended up with worse jobs and less secure jobs and jobs without unions. And so for a lot of working people, it didn't happen overnight, but you want to look at the kind of shift toward having at least some version, some amount of people without college degrees shifting away from the Democratic Party and going to the Republican Party over those next 20 years. That was a seminal moment. It was a very important moment. And it was, I think it was disastrous. I think it was a very bad policy choice and bad political choice for Democrats, frankly.
John, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Anytime, Rob. Good luck with the rest of the show.
That's John Shelton, professor and chair of Democracy and Justice Studies at UW Green Bay, vice president for higher education for the American Federation of Teachers, Wisconsin. We've been talking about his latest book. It's called The Education Myth: How Human Capital Trumped Social Democracy.